Okay, so first, I want to tell you why you're wrong. And then second, I want to tell you why I followed what you said.
Looks like. I haven't even, listener, I haven't even said anything yet.
Oh my gosh. I had the coolest conversation with ChatGPT about fasting.
Huh.
And it like completely backed up everything that I was doing.
My friend said I shouldn't do it. Am I being weird about it?
That's the one. Am I being weird about it?
Good boy.
So yeah, is it weird to fast for 40 days? And it responded, it depends on what you mean by fasting and your personal circumstances. So it goes into religious and spiritual fasting, medical considerations, modified fasts, etc. Mm-hmm. So, and then it asked me, like, what kind of fast are you thinking about? And so I tell it a 40-day water fast, modified with taking psyllium husk, activated charcoal, lemon and lime juice, sea salt, potassium, magnesium, and pickle and sauerkraut rind. And that I've done fast before, including a 15-day fast. I'm comfortable with knowing where my limit is and that I can break the fast when I need to. And it said, given your experience with fasting and awareness with your limits, a 40-day fast with the supplements you mentioned is certainly more structured than a pure water fast. The electrolytes and fiber and fermented brine should help with mineral balance, digestion, electrolyte retention, which are common areas of concern for extended fasts. That said, even with your experience, it is a good idea to monitor your body closely and give some, like, you know, blood check stuff. So, you know, kind of, you know, still trying to maintain, like, I don't know you that well yet. Like, let's get an even keel here on
a little bit of distance. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. It asks kind of like why you want to do this. Is it for a detox or spiritual practice? This kind of stuff. And I tell it's a little bit of both. It says kind of nothing. It's like, okay, that makes sense. And whatever. And then asks about my refeeding protocol. And I say I'm going to make some homemade bone broth and ask for recommendations beyond that. It gives me a bunch of stuff that I already know. And then I let it know that I'm also having decaf coffee and herbal tea blended with grass-fed butter and MCT oil. And it tells me about how that's good for mental clarity and sustaining the fast longer and supports detoxification and digestion. And then, so yeah, then I share with it that, oh, it asks what my current diet is, like that I would be going back to after the fast, and share that it would be a high fat, high protein diet, omitting processed foods, sugar, A1 dairy, soy, and grains. And it was very happy with that. Asks me about organ meats and nutrient dense foods. And I let it know that I take cow prostate, liver, and pancreas, and also have grass fed ground beef that includes heart and liver mixed in. And it's like, oh, you're ahead of the, you're ahead of the game here. And then we get to the, oh, and then I ask about a supplement I'm taking and if it would break the fast, and it says yes. So I decide not to take that. And then, okay, so after all you've heard, just heard from me, do you think I'm being weird or extreme with my plan for a 40-day fast? Not at all. Given your experience with fasting and your knowledge of your body's limits and your structured approach, this isn't just a random extreme experiment. It's a deliberate challenge with clear goals. Oh, and then I asked it what would be taking it to an extreme, which I thought it had a really good answer to it. It broke it down into five areas, being ignoring medical red flags, lack of preparation and knowledge, obsession or disordered thinking, chronic extreme fasting, and fasting without purpose. And it said, your approach doesn't seem to cross any of these lines. So I thought that was really cool. And so that was why you're wrong. Well, at least that's why your friend said you're wrong. Trying to get a rise out of you. I mean, yeah, it's this, I guess it's more, it's more tailored to me. Like you turn to ChatGPT more often than I do.
Yes.
But yeah, okay. I didn't use your model to see if you were being extreme.
No, indeed.
But then
that would be biased. That would not be a fair experiment.
But then, okay, yeah, cool. So I reversed it. So I talked with, right after our conversation, I talked with Margaret, and she wasn't as aware that I was starting the fast for Lent as I expected her to be. And she was like, oh, what'd you talk about?
Back to,
like,
that's, oh, fasting. That's a familiar conversation.
Yeah. So we chatted about it a little bit. And to my delight, her response to me taking a 40-day fast was, oh, okay. But then she was like, but what about the baby? And what about our plans to have you on a nutrient-rich diet until conception? And I was like, oh, yeah, that. So I relented and switched to watching no YouTube for Lent instead. And I went back to eating. And boy, did I ever go back to eating. Man, it's food's great, man. That's why I like, yeah, that's why I like to not eat it, because it's really great. It's too easy
sure.
to eat. It's just always right there, and you can just have more of it, and it's delicious yeah. and good
There's
for you.
So much of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, YouTube is hard. No, YouTube is
yeah,
hard.
Yeah, so this came up last week in your continued efforts to rid things from your life that you enjoy. You are getting rid of YouTube.
Yeah. It's just temporary. It's just for Lent.
Yeah.
And it's something that's been absolutely taking my mind share. It's been taking up too much time. I notice myself now, like at work or at home or whatever, I just open my phone and look at it and I'm like, I can't watch anything. And I just look at my phone. And then I put it down. Yeah. And it's not like a sad face. It's just like, here I am again trying to look at something on my phone, trying to watch something, trying to distract myself.
Great habit, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you do instead? When that happens, what do you do?
I check Overcast again to see if there's any podcasts I can listen to. I go to my music app and should I switch to a different album or stay with this album or go to SoundCloud, and I just try to listen. I was already listening to something for sure, but I tried to change what I was listening to in hopes that that will satisfy. And then I work harder. I go back to working because it's often at work, and it's like I did a thing, I completed a task, and then I take a second to like breathe, and then my mind is like, yeah, let's just take five. And so I open up my phone to look at something. I'm like, oh, no, I'm not looking at anything. So I put it down and then I get back to work. And so it's kind of like it's an unstructured Pomodoro where I've just been working for like 40 minutes, you know, working on like getting the shower walls up or getting my marmoreal flooring down or whatever. And then I'm like, oh, I want just a quick hit of nothing. You know, some coffee tutorial or some poker championship.
You want a little brain snack?
Yeah. You know, the word dope as slang for drugs predates the identification of the naming of dihydroxyphenylalanine.
Lalanine.
Dihydroxyphenylalanine. By almost a century.
Wow.
But my headcanon is still that. But my headcanon is still that dope is short for dopamine.
Sure.
Because that's the thing. Is that all the drugs, all the escapes, all the YouTubes, all the TikToks, they all just hit our dopamine button. And that's what we're addicted to.
I don't disagree that we are addicted to dopamine, but I don't think that's what all the drugs are doing. But
No, yeah, it's I mean, oversimplified.
That's fine. But yeah, like I 100%. I don't know if, because everything is not every. Oh no, everything is not everything. Uh-oh. Oh God.
I was being weird about it, and now everything isn't everything. What's going on? The fundamental principles.
Everything is crumbling.
I don't know that, because I think what that sort of talk from V'lady that we enjoyed that you got me onto, that I also referenced in an episode of Undo. I don't know that everything is an addiction to dopamine, mm-hmm. as we perhaps interpreted it, but mm-hmm. that is certainly one of the things that we are seeking. I think sometimes some of us are seeking, I want to say abandon, disassociation, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. And also it's a misdirected search for community and connection as well. Mm. Like Johan Hari has a book called Chasing the Scream about how when there's a disconnection from a tribe, we seek escape because we're unsettled and lost.
I am going to note that down because that feels pertinent.
It's an incredible book.
Yeah. There's a couple that I've got to read at the moment. There's so there is a book by a gentleman called David Dada called The Way of the Superior Man, which Ali Abdel, who pops up on TikTok occasionally and is not disconnected from some of the work I do, but is far more popular. He mentioned this as a good book for non-toxic men. So that's one that I want to check out. And I've got on my iPad, an article on running a men's group. That should be coming up soon. And it's like, it's weird. It's like they asked me to do it and then I'm like, cool, let's go. And then sort of haven't heard anything about it. But I'm still going to do it.
Nice.
And I should probably attend one.
Yes.
Should find I mean, something.
Well, you could attend one and get a feel for what they're like traditionally, or you could just skip that and make it your own without being influenced. Although you've been influenced by, media and the concept. So I don't think going to one would really ruin the authentic experience of
I think it's probably okay. I mean, this is essentially two men in a men's group. It is also, it was wonderful to have a conversation this week with someone who knows a thing or two about a thing or two, saying men's mental health is very much here in the UK, and I'm sure elsewhere is, something that we need to address.
Yeah. Yes.
So that is increasingly becoming a thing. Mm-hmm. My community interest company, my CIC, is nearly ready.
Nice.
The paperwork is being submitted sort of as we speak. So it's got to go off for regulatory checks for basically the government to go, does this look legit?
Nice.
Hopefully it do. And I can begin officially trading once I get some work in. We're getting there.
That's awesome, dude.
The work begins.
Yes. Oh man. So like a topic for us has on and off the pod a lot lately has been around my work.
Yeah.
And it's an ever continuing kind of source of a bit of stress because of, livelihood being tied to the amount of money you make from working. And we'd like to keep our house and stuff. And I think Margaret was sharing some kind of stresses with a friend, and the friend was like, well, make a plan B and make a definitive, set circumstance that triggers plan B. And then you don't need to think about it, because then just it will be plan A until the criteria are met for plan B. And then you switch to plan B and have a plan C and so on with clear criteria. And I was like, oh, that's really actually kind of smart. Because we don't have to worry about starting plan B until the criteria are met. And then it's just like, keep going on plan A. And I thought that was really cool. So I'm thinking about that. And I don't know what that criteria would be yet.
Right.
I gave a mild criteria to Margaret about it, like last week, of kind of like, okay, if you know, you're watching the money every week, and you know, if we get to this level, then we'll switch to panic mode, and I'll get like a gig economy job to make sure we get some money in or whatever. Like that's a plan Z kind of scenario, not necessarily a good plan B.
Why say that?
Well, because it doesn't make a lot of money. It's not a long-term kind of good situation. You know, it's floaties while we're, you know, floundering in the ocean, not necessarily a nice boat to sail on. Mm-hmm. So, like, right now, for me, plan A is continue doing Rockstar, build up God mode, and then kind of shift over to that eventually. Plan B, sort of in my mind, kind of unstructured or fully thought out, is either get a job working for, like, plan B, I guess, would be get a job working for another remodeler and I work for them. Mm. Plan C would be working for somebody in the men's health field so that I could just shift over to that sooner.
Why would that be plan C as opposed to plan B?
Because I don't have 20 years of experience in that, and I do in remodeling.
But would the objective not to be to go to the more desirable in the long term?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're starting with most desirable, which is where you are now. And if that doesn't pan out in the time frame that you want, you can
sure.
go to the next most
I'm not desirable. Ranking them by desirability, but by a feasibility and financial gain.
Sure.
So I think I could make more money as a remodeler working for somebody or as an electrician than I would working as a men's health coach assistant. I don't know. I don't even know what I'm looking
to
do.
Yeah.
There yet, but like.
So yeah, so plan B, plan A, plan C,
mm-hmm.
sort of making sense.
Yeah,
and you've got a sense for have you got a sense for what triggers plan B?
No, like vaguely, it's like we have an amount of money, and Margaret brings in an amount of money that amount of money pays for the mortgage and a little bit more. And so, like, we're not really at risk of losing the house, but we're treading, like, barely treading water with just her income. And so, you know, what I make is going towards the rest of the bills, which are plenty. There's debts. There's
no, more now than there were a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and like. The cost of everything is going, electricity is going up and water is going up and taxes are going up and so our money, but you know, the money I bring in goes to that. And also we want to build up a safety net. And wow, you know, maybe even like start contributing to a retirement fund at 40. That's a great time to start that, isn't it? And you know, like,
and get also, in shape.
Also just to not be stressed about money would be really nice. Like that's I was telling Margaret about this the other night. There was a time a year and a half ago where I was taking this drug called fluconazole, and it is a mold killing prescription medication. It's really strong. And I had a lot of mold in me. And what happens when mold dies is that it releases all of its mycotoxins, which are its nerve agent. It's warfare, its arsenal. I'm taking this pill. It kills the mold. It releases the toxins. I get sick, and in the way that I get sick from that is extreme fatigue. Like I am literally a puddle on the floor. Like I had Carl over doing some work on the house, and I was just laying on our porch, just right outside our front door, just flat on the ground. And he was just like walking around me because I'm like, you know, don't mind me, man. I'm just laying here in the sun. I can't do anything. I'm not even scrolling on my phone. I'm not like putting music on. I think maybe I put music on. I'm not doing anything. And I can't. And I can't think of anything. It fucks with my brain. I can't remember conversations I just had. Actually, there was one time where I was taking a lower dose so I could still walk around. And I was playing Magic the Gathering at the time. I could walk around, but it would still fucking with my memory, my short-term memory. And I played three hands. I was playing myself with three different hands of Magic the Gathering all around a table. And by the time I played my turn and went to walk around to the next, my next me's turn, I forgot what my previous hands were. So I could literally play myself without like cheating. It was actually really fun. It was a great time. So during this lasted for months, and I'm really thankful that I had Carl to help run do some labor, and I was paying him to do some labor for me for Rockstar, that because I still had some jobs going, and that was all working out really well. So I did have a little bit of a financial income, but like I was so wiped out, I couldn't do anything. And so I was able to just accept that. And I'm like, well, there's no point in stressing about anything because I can't even prepare for, I can't do anything to make things better. I can't prepare to make things better. All I can do is just exist. All I can do is just be, just wait this out. I just have to let the medication do its thing. And that was so nice. Like it sucked. It was in a lot of pain. I hated not being able to do stuff as a nine. Like I just wanted to like at least do the dishes or clean the floor because I was laying on it. You know, it's like something. But I couldn't do anything. And I just came to this point of peace of just being like, I've got nothing to worry about because it makes no sense to worry. So I'm not worrying. And wow, like this, I'm just existing. And how fucking cool is that? And it coincided with like taking psychedelics has really taught me of this, like we are just here to exist. We're here to be, we're here to try things out. We're not here to like grind the corporate machine and make money and whatever. Like you can do that. That's if that's your life goal, like great, but it's not mine. And now after that, now I'm not sick anymore. And I'm back on trying to make money, and I have obligations to fulfill. Like I miss that. I want to just be. I don't want to stress and worry about money. I texted you the other day or the other week. Like I feel like I'm an artist trapped in a working class lifetime, where I want to just be like sponsored or patronized by somebody, or just create stuff, just make stuff, just exist. And you know, I'm happy to make things that are really useful. Like I love my job. I love Rockstar. Like if I could just remodel people's houses and be good, just things are just taken care of. Like that's my dream. I know it's unrealistic, but I think about it all the fucking time. I just like, I don't want to ask them for money at the end of the project. I want to just have things be fine. I don't want to negotiate. I don't want to try and like make a profit. I don't want to whatever. I just like, I want to make your house better and then go to my cool house and then we're all happy.
I hear that, dude. I'm out here thinking about similar things to a degree. So, you know, I've just moved Undo to Acast.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And I'm investigating the whole Acast of it all, which for the uninitiated, Acast is a company that basically monetizes podcasts. It's the long and short of it. Mm-hmm. And right now, I am in a monetizable position. I'd rather shore up, like what I'm sort of hoping more than money is someone sees some numbers at Acast and goes, oh, okay, we should have a chat and see if we can't boost these numbers a little bit more. Mm. And partner up with some of the shows that are in the network, because it's a huge, huge, you know, network effectively. You know, see what can be done there, because it's obviously, as a proof of concept, it's obviously working and people are digging it. What would happen if we put a bit more, you know, wood behind that arrow? I tried to have that conversation. At the moment, they don't know me from Adam. So they're like, please, sir, read the documentation. Like, mm-hmm. I know more than you, but okay. That reminds me of, there's a Ron Swanson. There's an amazing moment where Ron Swanson goes into a DIY shop and he's got his big trolley, and he's picking stuff up, and a young, you know, like greeter or a young sort of employee, you know, comes up to him and says, "Can I help you with anything?" And he just, "I know more than you, son," and just walks on.
It reminded me of you getting banned on Reddit.
Okay.
Just gotta follow the rules. I mean, I know you got banned for not following the rules, but. Anyway,
play the game.
That's cool.
But it, you know, what that affords me is potentially, not now, but maybe later, is the ability for me to be able to, you know, make my art.
Yes.
And
yes,
for the money aspect to be taken care of.
Yes.
Not, you know, again, like it would take a while, and certainly with the money that you get from Acast, it would take a lot of people. But the idea is there that you know, you make the thing, you make it good, you make something that people like, and then the money kind of just flows or follows.
Yeah.
And it's almost directly tied to the goodness of the thing that you provide. Means that listeners still want to stick around, means that there are ads that can be delivered to them, and you know, you nurture that relationship as much as you can, and you deliver something that's high quality. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, because, you know, I over leveraged myself, as I so often do, with the membership thing, because I wanted to create something of high value. The problem with creating something of high value when there are, you know, six people signed up, is it becomes a little bit hard to justify that, because there's no real urgency, because I can always say to these six people, listen, you haven't got what you paid for, would you like your money back? And there's no real issue there. And then on the other side, and I've been seeing this on LinkedIn and other places for the last few years, you know, I watch these businesses, or I watch these entrepreneurs. There was one that I was grimly fascinated by, because he kept just making these awful, what he thought were comedy videos. And I was fascinated with trying to pick apart why they were shit. Because the writing was fine.
Okay.
The writing wasn't shit, but there was something else that made them, like, there was a, for want of a better word, like a naivety towards them,
sure,
in the production, that was just like, there's something, I got really interested in it, because it was like, why is it that this guy is doing the two-headed conversation thing, where he's, you know, being him and then being someone else that's him?
Yeah.
Why does it work when some people do it, and then this guy? It's really, and like, people were responding to it. People seem to be enjoying it. Uh-huh. So I'm obviously, you know, doing my media studies thing and like overanalyzing
sure.
it.
Sure, sure.
But
sure.
I also know that anyone who's done media studies will also overanalyze and go, no, this is shit.
That's the thing, is that when you study something, you see all its flaws. It ruins yeah. it for you. You can't enjoy yes. it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Because yeah. like I'm watching these videos going, he's having a conversation with this character, but this character is in a completely different place. Mm-hmm. And there's no connection. Justification, yeah. if you like, for how this conversation is happening.
Uh-huh.
And I watched someone else make a video where they did the same, you know, the same thing. It was another two head, you know, same guy, yeah. two different characters talking to each other, but they had headphones and a little microphone thing.
Right.
So one of them had a headset on, like he was yeah. in a call center, and the other one was just talking into his phone. So there was a justification for why these two characters were right. talking to each other. And I was yeah. like, I think that's what
yeah.
it is, you know. Because yeah. without it, you're just going, something is very, very missing here. Mm-hmm. So there was this guy, and he was the first to drop. And there's been more dropping of like, well, I gave it a good try, and it didn't really work out. So mm-hmm. off to the job market I go, or I've just yeah. found a job here. And
yeah,
I've held on with tooth and nail, with claws digging into the ground, mm-hmm. going, no, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. my autonomy, I need it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to figure out. It's like, do I keep doing that, or do I relent? You know?
Yeah. So for me, like, because what I think we're talking about is compromise.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's what a plan B is, as well. A plan C is like, it's,
yeah.
You know, and for me, I was like, what is the, you know, I need to do something that is in demand. I'm not in demand anymore.
Right.
I was never massively in demand anyway. But my particular boutique level of services, whatever, never caught on fire. I have good clients, the ones that haven't ghosted me. But that is an indication as well, the fact that people do feel like they can just abandon you and not explain and right. just... You know, and that's a weird thing about this line of work, is that people can just disappear, and that's like a stream of your income that yeah. can just disappear with no explanation and no warning.
Yeah, and no reason, that's, even.
You yeah. know, hundreds of pounds can just disappear mm-hmm. with no warning, because they've got bored, or because yep. they've got busy, or because yep. whatever. And ultimately, you know, I'm not in demand. And so my compromise is, you know, I have to ask myself, okay, if I'm going to do the same equivalent of the LinkedIn message that's like, listen, this hasn't really worked, uh-huh. what is the version that I can live with?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to do now, is trying to build the version that I can live with. Right. That might not be forever, but at least for now. And yeah, so like all I can really offer is my own, to some extent, parallel experience.
Yeah.
Of trying
make
to...
Make a fantastic hit of a podcast. Is that what you're saying I should do? Take the Apple charts by storm?
We shall see about that. You know, sure. it's like the parable of the, you know, the farmer, or the pharaoh, or the king, whichever version mm-hmm. of that mm-hmm. fable we'll you go to, that's the, you know, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe. Yeah, the podcast thing aside, like with the work thing, I think all I can offer is like, yeah, I get it. I think there is a degree to which we're smart people. And I think there's maybe I will speak for myself and say there's a perhaps not inconsiderable amount of hubris.
Oh, for sure.
That's like, nah, but yeah, I'll be all right. I don't Absolutely. Need to. Look at these poor people. You know, look at these poor, desperate people that have had to abandon their freelance life and go and get a job. Look at these poor, sad people. How awful for them.
Yeah. And this has been working for me for 15 years. Like,
yeah.
The jobs just keep coming in. Why yeah. would that ever stop? And yeah. I've known this whole time. It's like, this is incredible. And like, I'm not doing anything to have all these jobs come in. Like, I just, they're just coming. And now I'm at the point where they're not. And so it's like, okay, I have to learn this whole new skill set, whole new side of the business, which is great. It's expansive. It's, you know, I'm learning, I'm growing. Wonderful. This is really hard. And when you've grooved these pathways so mm-hmm. well that like I'm just so focused on the work and so focused on the connection and not necessarily the new person, the new like people finding me.
Because you haven't had to be.
I haven't had to be, which is so weird.
You've had what I think a lot of businessy types really like and applaud, which is essentially a business that spreads via word of mouth, because that is the best marketing yeah. that you can have.
Yeah.
And you had that. And so it's like, well, I've never needed to market because I've always, right. work has always begat work. And when that dries up, it's like, oh, wow, now I guess I've got to learn how to do this thing that I never had to do before.
And it's weird because like my quality of work and quality of connection with people and everything like that, nothing's changed there. People are still really
happy
with me.
If anything, it's probably improved.
It has. My skills are better. My reputation yeah. is better. And then it's just, it feels so weird. It's like, oh, well then the other part that was based on that should just be keep going. It should just keep going because it's mm-hmm. nothing's worse from that. So
yep.
I should be fine, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, the world is bigger than that. There's other factors, and like everybody's feeling the pinch. Everybody's feeling nickel and dimed, and yeah, people learned a lot of DIY skills because they were trying to do it themselves. And yeah, climate's changed. And I'm not talking about the environment.
Yeah. It's really hard to, it's a difficult period to work for yourself. Mm-hmm. And this is the other bit that we signed on for. It's yes, we can go to the cinema at midday and catch a matinee. And that's wonderful. And no one else is in the cinema and we can just have a great time. And I used to do that. I used to love it. But also, when times is tough as they are now, you ain't got nobody to lean on. Mm-hmm. There's no company that's essentially going to subsidize your existence for a bit.
There's no PTO.
And I had conversation this week with someone that I'm hoping is and reasonably confident is going to be able to pass work my way. And I've watched, you know, it's a company I used to work for, and I watched them really grow and blossom and expand shortly after I left, which is always a thing. I didn't realize I was holding them back. I always thought I was trying to, anyway, fine, whatever.
No, you loosened the pickle jar for them.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Yep.
And I was having a chat with him, with the MD this week, being like, I kind of wanted to say, like, because it's weird, like, maybe partly a Zoom thing, maybe partly one or two other things. It wasn't quite as natural and warm a conversation as we'd sure. had before.
Sure.
And I think maybe there was a relationship that got eroded over the years, because I think, you know, I wasn't super happy there, and I think maybe that relationship took its toll. I don't know. Sure. But I kind of wanted to say, like, I'm really proud of you and what you've done, what the company's done. You know, you seem to have gone from strength to strength, and it's like, not really. Like, yeah, they're doing well, but they've also done really badly. You know, they've also had hard times.
Sure. Yeah.
And they've, you know, gone up and down. Like, it's, you know, it's not linear. It's not a straight path. Yeah. And there is no, you know, I really thought for him, there was kind of the happy ending, because he built this thing up over 10 years. And mm-hmm. every Christmas we'd have a conversation where he'd say to one of the people, like, I think this might be it for us. We might be done. Because, you know, he'd get blisteringly drunk. And I think, you know, partly because he needed the escape.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd sort of say, you know, in confidence to someone, like, I don't think we're going to make it. And he begged, borrowed, and stole whatever he could. He, you yeah. know, he did what he could to make the thing work with employees, which, you know, I can only applaud him for.
Yeah.
And, you know, I left when they were coming up for 10 years old, if not already 10. And the next time I saw him was a few years later, and he'd left the business and was like on the board, but not the MD anymore. There was a new MD, and he was kind of just, on the board taking a salary. And mm-hmm. then that ended up not being the case anymore. The MD had to get fired, and he had to come back in again.
Mm.
And he, you know, there is no sense of, there is no, I feel like we think there's supposed to be a template that we're following. Or that there is a blueprint or something, a stencil, an outliner, something that we're supposed to be replicating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either as entrepreneurs or businessmen or men or whatever. And, yeah. you know, as if there are footsteps in the snow that we're supposed to step into.
Right.
There fucking aren't. There aren't. God, I had the bleak thought a couple of days ago, like, no one's coming. No one's coming. No one's coming to save. Like,
yeah.
I think for a long time, and I can't remember if this is a conversation we've had before, but like for a long time, I've sort of been waiting for, like, when's it start? Like, when does it all kick off? Like, I've done so much prep. I'm 42 years old. I've got 42 years of prep. Like, does it start now? And it's like, no, this is it. This is it. No one's coming.
This is it.
And there are no footsteps in the snow for us to follow.
That's when I was carrying you.
That's exactly. I think maybe, as I think about this, as I expostulate, which is not a word, but I'm going to go with it. I think maybe there were. I think 50 years ago, maybe there were, because you were a blacksmith and
you had a son
and your son became a blacksmith, or you had a daughter and your daughter became either a rebellious blacksmith or taught people to ride horses, you know? Right. There was a lineage. There was an understanding of, you know, farmers. Fucking everybody was a farmer, you know, 100 years ago. Like, that's what you, everybody was a farmer, because that's all that we had was farming shit. And so you knew what you did. And it wasn't about passing on a legacy or a business or a brand from one generation to the next. It was like, no, that's how we feed ourselves, is we till the land and we milk the cows and we do the things.
Yeah.
And so when I die, or, you know, when I'm in my dotage, you'll be doing that. Not because we've got the Mark Steadman, Brendan Hutchins milk company to maintain and a brand to maintain, but because that's how survival be. And post-industrial revolution, post maybe even before, you know, the internet, but somewhere within the information age, that stopped. But, you know, and I think maybe, you know, it was in the sort of the era of management and middle management, because that's not something to which people really aspire.
Sure.
It's something you end up doing. So it's not something, you know, I was a civil servant, mid-level line manager, and my dad was a mid-level line manager before me, and his dad, like, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not actually a legacy.
Funny enough, a lot of my most well-to-do clients are kind of like mid-level managers. Like, they're often just in meetings so that they can get information and then pass that information on to other people. And it's like,
emailers in chief. Yep.
It's just, what's going on here? Why is there an extra person involved? Why can't they actually do something?
Yeah. At some point something gets made. Why can't the two people just make the thing?
But that, you know, that's from the perspective of people, you know, you and I, who do things. And so, and we're both the entrant and the exit on ideas and
things. It's frustrating. And I used to have a very hard time. And as I've been reconnecting with people, I mean, I will grant myself the grace here that I did this a long time before I asked anyone for help. That I actually did say to one or two people, listen, you know, I know I wasn't always the easiest to deal with. And that was because you know, if I'm going to be brutal, fundamentally, I didn't really respect, like, I didn't say this to them, obviously. Yeah. Like, fundamentally, I didn't really respect what you did.
Right.
Because
yeah.
I make things. I know I make digital things. And, you know, if for you, that then that counts for nothing, then that's fine. But, like, I made things. And I was constantly told to go here, do this, meet this deadline, push this thing forward, make these yeah. things happen by people who didn't know how the things were made, right. let alone actually made them themselves.
Right.
It'd be one thing if it was someone who made things and then went up the ranks, you know, who cut their mm-hmm. teeth on PHP and then went up the ranks and so knew what they were asking, even mm-hmm. if their skills were a bit rusty. Like my first boss or my second boss used to be a coder, so he knew like, you know, you weren't going to bullshit him. But then we get this you know, series of management who, you know, these are people that I like a lot and respect because they're nice, good people. But in my most frustrated moments, I'm like, what are you for?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be better if, you know, but this is the thing and something that I've been thinking about because it came up. So Grace Blakely is someone that I've mentioned before. She wrote the book Vulture Capital.
Yeah.
Which I'm still only partway through. I've got to go back to it. And she was talking about how capitalism needs labor. Because she was talking about, she was asked about AI and what were her concerns about AI. And I think her thought was like, capitalism will find a way, because yes, people will be out of work, but like capitalism needs labor because you need people to buy the things.
Yeah.
And you need to pay them money so that they can buy the things because they don't own the means of production.
Right.
So whatever it is that you want them to, that they need, they have to have money that you pay them. So therefore they have to, we need labor.
We have to let people do something so that they can earn enough money to buy the things that we want them to buy.
Feels
God-awful.
Maddening and futile.
Yep.
Because we need people. It's so cyclical. We need people to feed the system to buy. So that's why these people exist. They don't exist because of, or these jobs, I should say. These people, like, I really want to do a job, and I'm not doing a great job here, but I really want to separate the person from the job. Because like I said, these are people I really like, and they're good people. And I would, you know, be honored to consider them friends. And I know I'm also shitting on them at the same time, but I'm sort of shitting on the job, which exists. And these are very smart people, so it's not as if they don't have skills. It's not as if, you know,
right.
they can't do stuff. This is their particular role. And over here in the UK, we've just abolished Labour, as in Labour, the party, the political party, which is now in government, is abolishing. If I say quango, is that a word
that
exists in American English?
Okay. Is it short for quagmire?
What is it? It's an acronym, and it is a semi-public administrative body outside of the civil service, but receiving financial support from the government, which makes senior appointments to it. So it's I believe it. It's a like quasi-autonomous something, non-government organization. In fact, it might be quango.
Okay.
NHS England is a big quango, and they just exist basically to be a bureaucracy. They exist to manage.
Right.
The management of the National Health Service here, and they're being abolished, you know, because Labour is now in this big cost. The Labour Party is in this big cost-saving thing because we ain't got no money, and those jobs will have to go somewhere. That work has to go somewhere. That, you know, lowercase L Labour has to go somewhere. But at the same time, like, there's not enough work about, and there are too many people. But also, it seems like, oh God. Anyway.
Universal basic income.
Oh, my God. We're further away from that than ever, it seems.
But at the moment, things will
swing. Yeah. All of that to say,
mm-hmm.
it's hard being a freelancer.
When you were saying, like, what are these middle managers for, a thought did come to mind of like, well, they do make a business run. And when you're a solo entrepreneur, having to do all of the different tasks yourself, having somebody else take care of parts of it, it's like, it's pretty nice.
Oh yeah. And that's still doing things, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But at some point, that you do need people who can coordinate efforts because otherwise you just end up with people duplicating work or not knowing what they're doing.
Yeah. Oh man. I had a good men's group yesterday.
Ooh.
We talked about our authentic selves and what is the authentic self and how it manifests differently for different people. Like one guy's authenticity was in his clothing. He, was working some jobs where he felt like he had to dress up in a certain way. And if he felt really inauthentic about it, and he's gotten a new job where he just wears what he feels comfortable in, and he feels way more relaxed, and he feels like he can express himself better. He feels more comfortable. He feels more at peace with himself just because he's wearing the proper clothing. And one guy was talking about how he doesn't feel authentic at work because, like, he actually likes his coworkers, and he's got no problem with them, but he doesn't want to talk to them. He just wants to get in, do his work, and go home.
Yes.
And not get caught up in a 30-minute conversation as he's trying to leave or he wants to put on his headphones so that people don't come into his office and interrupt him and stuff. And he obviously felt pretty conflicted about that. And so I was like, dude, when you're at work, like, you're being hired to do the work. You're not being hired to be your authentic self. They don't care about your authentic self. You're a number to them. And so you don't owe it to the company or the people at it to give them your full you-ness. That's not what they're paying you for. So if you only have the capacity or desire to be at a certain level where you're just in and out, that's all you need. That's all you need to do. You don't need to do more. You don't need to give more. You don't need to overextend yourself, and you don't need to give yourself a hard time about it either. You can just be, and be authentic with your family and friends and outside of work, outside of the obligation that our society has built for us to maintain this capitalistic hamster wheel. I didn't flesh it out that much, but that was my take.
There is a style or a fashion or a type of workplace that actually does want you to feel like you can come in and be.
Yeah.
They want the whole you. They want you to bring your whole self to work.
Yes.
And that depends on the company. I think the best companies are the ones that say, bring your whole self to work and fucking leave at 5. I don't know how many of those exist because, often we get the whole, we're a family here, which is code for, if we need you to work on Saturday, like,
right,
you're working on Saturday.
Your family
almost needs every
you.
Job I've had has been the case. And I'm just thinking about, dear listener, we had a brief interlude where I was complaining about an email exchange. And it's so strange. Like, I've had this attitude over the last few years. Maybe it's arrogance. Maybe I'm just shitty, and a shitty freelancer. But more and more messages come that are out of bounds of the stuff that we were supposed to be doing, and I'm like, why should I?
Yeah,
because I know this person's going to ask me to do a bunch of extra work, and I know I'm not going to get paid extra for it.
Why not?
Because they don't have the money.
Mm.
And the problem with, I don't know if there is a difference between doing this in the UK versus the US. But I think here it's like, if I go back and say, well, there isn't extra capacity for this. There is a sense of like, why wouldn't you like help me out here? You know what I mean? Why wouldn't you just do this? Like, we need it. Why wouldn't you just do it? Or like, because this particular organization is not run the way I might run an organization, things often get left to the last minute. And then the people closest right. to the edge are the people who often get left holding the bag.
Yeah.
And I resent the fuck out of that.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a relationship thing. Maybe if it's a new relationship, I'm more, you know, amenable to doing stuff. I also wonder, I also think it's actually the type of relationship and the sense that, like, some people, you will go the extra mile because you know they don't take the piss. You know, they don't, like, yeah. constantly ask you to do those kinds of things. And then other people, they are. And, like, as a people pleaser, there's always this sense of like, I'm never quite doing enough for you. And right. I actually yes. had that conversation with this client a few weeks ago where it was like, oh, I'm clearly not doing enough for you and you're disappointed. But I thought I was doing what we agreed, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know where any of this is going. But to say, like, leaving your work behind is a fucking tricky thing. So with the men's group thing and with that conversation, like, there are places yeah. that do want you to bring your full self and yeah. that aren't necessarily doing that out of a cynical ploy to get more out of you. It might just be because they recognize that when you're able to do that, people are probably happier.
For sure.
But that's not everywhere. And so, like, I understand your argument of, like, you're not paid to bring that aspect of yourself. But I also think it's okay for that person to be like, this is another sort of terminology that I've heard people talk about, is like having an owner's, like an operator's manual for each employee, yeah. A sort of user guide for each employee to be like, this is how I operate. You know, if I've got my headphones on, it means I'm not really here for a chat. Like, I respect you, I like you, you're a nice person, but when I come to work, I'm here because I want to get a job done and I want to be able to leave that job at the end of the day.
Right.
I'm not giving you, and you know, you can make this stuff like super explicit. Like, I'm not giving you short shrift. I don't think any less of you. I don't, you know, I respect the hell out of you, but I'm not here for the chats because I don't yeah. need that.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not a reflection on you or anyone else. And if you need that chat, if you want that chat, please go find them elsewhere. Like, that's not what you're going to get here. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're able to be explicit about that and respectful mm-hmm. about that,
yeah.
You know, one of the guys I used to work with was very good at just like, 5 o'clock, I'm out, you know, right. While he was there, he was fully there, fully present in on the job. Yep. Let's get yep. shit done.
Yep.
But if you want any more from me, and you know, slightly younger generation, they are a bit better at that. I think a lot of that might be getting beaten out of the younger generation at the moment because the economy's not so good, so they might have to suck it up a little bit more. But there was a, you know, generation before mine or after mine, I guess, that are a bit more like, no
yeah, yeah.
you don't get to ask more from me without paying.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I'm kind of like, I'm not too far away from you, but I do resonate yeah. with that a little bit more. And I very often am setting up my billing as hourly, like with yeah. with most clients. So like, yeah, you have an extra thing to send me, yeah, no problem, I'll just bill you yeah. for it and I'll get to it when I can, hopefully before your deadline. Like,
yeah, yes.
That's the way I operate.
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to return much more to an hourly rate, because like a lot of the stuff that I've been doing, a lot of the circles that I've been moving in, people say you shouldn't charge hourly because there's value, and it's like, yeah, but when you've got people who have a slightly different relationship to value, if you like, mm-hmm.
I don't understand their argument. What's the value argument?
This is a pretty capitalist notion, I think. And that might be one of the reasons why I'm slightly moving away from it. But it's, say I have a package to deliver mm-hmm. an audio episode and a video episode for the same show, audio version, video version. I do mm-hmm. slight bit of a difference, slight tweaks to make one work, you know, to make them both work in that medium.
Yeah.
And so my labor is probably that of someone who's producing 1.5 audio episodes, because I'm doing a bit extra to make it work for video.
Sure.
But I'm delivering the value of 2 episodes.
Sure.
So I'm charging by the value delivered rather than the labor that it takes. And I used to be very much, I just charged for my labor. And to be honest, I was pretty comfortable with that. And there were plenty of times when something took me 5 minutes and I didn't charge for that. So like, it took me 5 minutes. The right. goodwill, well, it's not even the goodwill's more important. It's just like, I'm not going to raise an invoice for a quarter of a unit of time or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
And I know like there's other people who are like, yeah, well, you should charge a minimum. Like if someone wants you to think about a problem, if you're on the toilet and you think about a client's question, you mm-hmm. should bill that time. And fair enough. That's an argument for that. And I'm not dismissing it when I say that. And that was me for ages. And I think it made perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Money in, labor out. And then part of the sort of business cult I joined a lot, and this is not just this place, a lot of places are like, you should charge, and people can get really, really militant about this. You should charge based on the value that you create for that business. Because a logo that took you 5 minutes, and it's funny, mate. I like, this is one of the earliest conflicts I ever had with a boss, actually. The first time I ever spoke up and it raised the hackles of a boss. It was my first ever job. And a customer came in wanting some simple thing fixed. And it was, to us, literally like hitting a button or a key command or a reboot or a something. Like something so simple in a computer shop. And my boss was like, yeah, and we charge like 30 quid for that. And I was, you know, because I was young, I was whatever. And I was like, oh, so you con people, something like that. Or you rip people off. Or it wasn't quite like that. But, I was definitely being kind of shitty about it. And like, rightly so, he was like, hey. And explained, like, he didn't know how to do that thing. So you've created value because you know, the value is in the fact that you know how to do that thing. It talks a little bit to what we were talking about last week with profit and compensation. It's a little bit there.
Yeah.
Because yes, you've had years of study, which means you know this thing, and that's fine. And so what I've ended up doing with a lot of my clients is essentially pricing on a package basis, which makes the money predictable for them. Because they know they're only ever going to pay this amount, and
makes sense.
and it does, and it's based on, a lot of it is based on value. I still kind of peg it a little bit to an hourly rate, but then that makes my hourly rate actually really expensive. Mm-hmm. And as I'm looking to deliver a different kind of service for a different kind of clientele, I am much more inclined to go back to, I just have an hourly rate. And, there's a couple of agreements here. If you want a predictable outlay, you buy X amount of hours with me every month or whatever. And, my particular thing is like, if they don't get used, they still get billed because I'm reserving that time for you and yada, yada.
Yeah.
But if we go over, we can have an agreement beforehand of like, you can go over by X percentage or whatever.
Sure.
You can afford to pay for an extra couple of hours if there's a spike in demand. Otherwise, we'll punt the job to next week. Like if you want an extra bit of stuff done, it's like, yeah, we'll do it next week or next month because you've used up all your hours. And that to me, dirt simple. Let's just, nice and easy. I don't feel like I'm nickeling and diming people.
Right.
But then when you get into, as I've been working for the last few years, and certainly with this client especially, I charge this not insignificant amount of money a month, and it's based on the value I deliver. But because I can't peg it to the time that I spend, it then creates a lot of wiggle room in my brain for like, should I do this? Because then it's like I'm never doing enough to justify the fee.
Yeah.
And that's just a problem in my own brain. That's just a problem sense of worth and all that shite.
Yep.
But it does breed resentment when you're constantly being asked to go above and beyond.
Right.
Because it's like, oh, what am I going to do? Am I going to write? Because sometimes having the discussion about, well, this is going to cost you X, it just feels cantankerous, like obstreperous. It just feels mm-hmm. like it's kind of getting in the way and you know, slowing things down or just coming up with roadblocks or just being petty. And all of those things I don't like, but it's at the same time, it's like, well, if you want me to do a thing.
So yeah, roadblock, interesting, cantankerous, you know, that's up to you. Do you feel like you are being petty? Like, is that upsetting for you because you actually do feel like you are being petty? Or do you feel like, no, I just think that somebody's going to perceive it that way?
Yeah, it's a really good question.
Because like, you mentioned, you know, for some people, it would be easy to do just that little extra task or whatever, depending on how things are set up, you know, the relationship is set up or the finances is set up or whatever. And it seems like also for some people, it's rubbing you the wrong way. And it seems like it's all kind of a little bit framing. Not just in your head, also structurally, but yeah, this is kind of an interesting little
There is an
thing
attachment to a sense of, I don't know if reciprocity is probably the wrong word.
Appreciation.
But like fairness or equalness or equity.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that is out of balance. And that's very strong for me. You know, when there is a sense of unfairness or unjustness, that's felt quite strongly. And I, you know, I will fight it for other people as well. It's not just me. You know, I'm keenly aware when other people are being treated unfairly. And it, you know, it was difficult in previous jobs when a client, you know, in an agency I worked for would want extra work and the boss would okay it. I'm like, but that's not fair because they've paid us to do a certain amount of work. And he's like, yeah, but we need to get it a good foot in the door. We need to maintain the relationship or whatever. But then it's like, but then the relationship's built on, I mean, I never went as far as to think this, but like, yeah, but then the relationship is slightly built on you being a pushover.
Right.
You know, there's a better way of putting that, but like, because at some point, if you're not clear, and this is, you know, clarity is kind, as Brené Brown says, clear is kind, unclear is unkind, that, you know, like, but then, like, I feel like our relationship is pretty clear, but I think that about lots of things sometimes. And I know, I'm pretty sure I've stated it multiple times, and people just, because people don't read emails, that's part of a problem. People just do, they do not read emails. It's one of the things I've realized, like, you put things in emails, people don't read them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that I've said it. It doesn't matter that it's in a contract. People don't read stuff. They just go, yeah, move on. Let's get the thing done. And that's part of the thing. It's like me stopping the train. Like, the train's moving. Let's go. We're doing the thing. And I'm stopping the train by going, whoa, hang on. You need this extra bit of work done. I need to make sure that I'm going to become, no, the train's moving. We haven't got time. You're holding up the train. The train's moving. And that's that sense of like, so it's not that it's petty so much.
Yeah.
It's just like, what, you know, I'm pulling the emergency cord on the train to stop it.
Right.
But the train's just like, no, we're moving. And so what ends up happening is the train just goes. And I'm
you
like,
can just get off if you want. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to make trouble, you can just leave.
What is getting off? Is getting off saying, I don't want to work for you anymore. Is getting off saying, no, I'm not going to do that particular thing. And then you've damaged the relationship.
Right. Exactly.
You know, which again is built on a level of not exploitation, because no one actually is going out to shit on people, but is, you know, everybody's trying to get their needs met.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Yeah.
And it's then a question of how well are you going to fight your corner to get your particular needs met.
and as freelancers, that's what we've got to do. No one's going to stick up for us but us.
No. That's a good shout. That's a good point. It is our job to advocate for ourselves.
Yes.
And that's a good point. That's a good framing. I like that.
Yeah. Well, as always, correct me if I'm wrong.
Go Hawks! Thank you.
Hopefully this is the episode that the podcast reviewer listens to.
most likely it's the one that I've just that's just dropped.
Nice. That was a good one. We got a little fighty. I like that.
Yeah, that was a spicy one.
Yeah.